welcome to Rewatchable, episode number 285. Today we're discussing Sense8, season 2, episode 3, Obligate Mutualisms. I'm Danielle, and I'm going to be your host for this episode. But before we jump in, and before I introduce everyone else, I just want to give you our contact info. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at re_watchable. And you can come find us on Tumblr. We're at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. Now, as I mentioned before, I'm not by myself this week. With me this week, I have my fellow superfan, Karen, and newbies, Kristen and Natalie. Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Hi.
Imagine if you were just sitting here talking to yourself for an hour and a half about Sense8, though.
I mean, I wouldn't doubt it. That does sound like something I would do. So, not out of the question. So everybody can get used to our voices. Let's do our round of fun facts for the week. Natalie, would you like to kick us off here?
So, I did have a relative amount of, like, objective fun this week. You know, it was the premiere of Supernatural for this season, which is a big deal for me. And I saw Venom and I saw Kesha in concert. It was the last night of her whole entire world tour. And all these things are very good. No, the fun fact of my week, which is the most boring adult possible thing, is that I found a sewing machine being thrown out by a house up the road that regularly hoards things, an old, like 1980s Singer sewing machine, which were very indestructible, with all its parts. And I basically took it apart, cleaned it, and it completely works and functions. I made Leo a small glasses pouch out of some scrap fabric to test whether it would work, and now I have a sewing machine that functions. And I used to know how to use a sewing machine when I was a teenager, and I haven't done it in some time, like probably about 15 years. And I've been meaning to get one for a while. And now I have one, and it's free and very old school and indestructible and simple. These ones are very bomb proof, these old iron Singer ones. Yeah. And I'm very excited by this, and I've been just thinking a lot about my sewing machine for some time this weekend and thinking about all the things I'm going to do with it. I'm not very good or anything, but it's just very, I couldn't make a dress, but I can make, like, I can, like, fix things quickly, and I'm very excited by this. So, yeah, free street trash pays off once again.
I love it. I go dumpster diving frequently. I've never gotten something as awesome as a Singer sewing machine.
Yeah.
I love my Singer. So this is really exciting.
Oh my God. Yeah, I am. I'm going to teach myself to do things a bit better than what I've made, like a bear, and I've made like a teddy bear and stuff, but I just, I haven't done it in a long time, but I didn't sew my hand together or anything yet, so it's all very exciting.
That's a plus. And they're so easy to use that I'm sure it'll come back to you.
Yeah, I think it will. No time. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you.
Very exciting.
Kristen, what's your fun fact for the week?
My fun fact is that my roommate was really awesome and took me to see A Star Is Born today. And even though it gave her all kinds of emotions, it was still really good. And yeah, I was really impressed by Bradley Cooper, and knowing that this is like his directorial debut was really interesting. So I'm interested to see what he does next as a director, and like if it kind of sticks to the same style and all that.
It's on my list. I really want to go see that one.
I hadn't seen any of the previous iterations, so I didn't know the story. Like, I haven't seen the Barbra Streisand version, and I haven't seen the one before that either. I want to, but I kind of, since I hadn't already seen them, I was like, you know what, let's go into this brand new here, and then if I want to, I can go back and watch the other two. So I do want to see the older ones.
It's not out here yet, which is interesting, because the main experience I have of that movie, but like the main things I've noticed on that movie was like all the drama that went down with like the Lady Gaga fans trying to apparently sabotage like Venom's opening numbers because they opened on the same day. Fun fact, those two movies are shot by the same cinematographer. So the same person who designed the entire like look of Venom also like cinematography wise also did the same for Star Is Born. But
that's hilarious.
I didn't realize that.
I didn't either.
It's really random. But because they didn't come out on the same day here, all of this like Venom versus Lady Gaga like internet discourse has been very confusing to me.
I mean, he wins the cinematographer wins no matter what.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's great.
Oh my gosh. And Karen, what is your fun fact for the week?
My fun fact is that I don't like emotions, and Star Is Born is awful, and I hate it and don't see it. No, just kidding. It's a really good movie, but I do reject the feelings that it gave me. My actual fun fact is that my favorite holiday is Halloween, and it is officially October, which means that it's officially almost Halloween. I'm very excited. I'm gonna go spend it with my best friends in Rhode Island, and we're gonna dress up as something, but I don't know what I'm gonna dress up as, so any ideas are welcome. I think we're leaning toward video game characters because there's a bar, I think, that we can go to that's having a contest for best video game Halloween costumes and stuff. And we all play Overwatch together, but some of those Overwatch costumes are really detailed, and I don't know if I can do that. But I might be able to do, like, a Lara Croft or something. So
you guys should go as Mario, Luigi, and, like, Princess Peach or something.
Yeah. That would be not too bad.
It'd be fun. It would be really funny.
Initially, I wanted to go as Meg from Hercules because I almost have a complete costume of that thanks to my bridesmaid dress for one of my best friend's weddings. But then they wouldn't dress up as Pain and Panic. I have no idea why.
Oh, come on.
Right? It would have been perfect.
Some friends you've got.
Seriously. This is my time to shine.
Call them out.
Yeah.
This year they dress as Pain and Panic. Next year you'll dress as something that they need you to be.
Yeah, exactly. They listen to this podcast, so when they eventually get to this episode, they're going to be like, thanks, Karen. Thanks
calling for us out.
Oh, boy. Yep, they're
going to
love it. It's going to be great. Shout out to them. The other hosts kind of already know my fun fact. And I can't even get it out because it's so
I have no idea what you're talking about.
What?
Did something significant happen today?
Oh, my God.
Life-altering, maybe?
Oh, my God. Okay, so I met the love of my life today.
Congratulations.
When's the wedding?
Yeah, we are not meant to be, but we did take the most gorgeous engagement photo I've ever seen in my life. The only thing that's missing is a ring. This weekend, in Chicago, there is a convention called ACE Comic Con or ACE Midwest. And the main headliner is my number one all time favorite actor, someone who like, I can't even begin to describe how much I respect his work and just love him as a person. And that person is Chris Evans. And I have been wanting to meet him for the longest time. And
my friend and yours.
Yeah, my friend and yours. And he doesn't do conventions often. He's busy. It's not his kind of thing. And he also has like social anxiety with these kinds of things. So he's sort of like my white whale. Well, he came to Chicago and he actually showed up and he didn't cancel. And I got a photo with him and was able to thank him for the past 8 years. So the wedding is next fall, and it will be wonderful. And so my fun fact is that I met the love of my life today. We are not getting married, but I'm going to keep staring at this gorgeous photo of the two of us I'll put it up on my social mediums. Probably by the time you're hearing this, it's probably going to be up there. So if you would like to take a look at me dressed as Agent Carter and him dressed as just stunningly attractive, you can do so.
What is his hat? What team is
Boston?
The Boston Red Sox.
Oh, it is the Red Sox, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I was like, did you wear that to be antagonistic? I don't like, given that he's come to Chicago, but yes, yeah. I was, they're all the sports. They're all, there's a lot of sports out there.
There's a lot of sports. Yeah. He and Lee Pace were both rocking the hats today. All right, I need to stop looking at this. We need to talk about Sense8. We're not talking about Captain America today. We're not talking about Chris Evans.
What if we were?
I wonder what that would be like.
I know. It would be nonstop. The episodes would be like 5 hours long each, and Natalie and I would just like go off.
Cry. I'm already crying.
Like, I know. When you said,
yeah, it's just many, many crying.
It's good to keep in mind.
So much crying, yeah. Anyway, but today we're talking about Sense8, and actually I might cry during this episode too, but we're going to get to that. I will explain in a minute, but first of all, I want to give the show synopsis, and this comes to us from Ariana, and her synopsis reads, "In this episode, the Sense8s finally think that they are free from whispers, but by the end of the episode, their fortunes take a nasty turn. Meanwhile, the cluster helps Sun break out of a prison, and Wolfgang discovers some new Sense8 abilities, while Leto's trio decides to take the next step." So, this episode, I want to preface this with, this is probably the episode of Sense8 that I have seen the most. And that is because of a couple of reasons. The first reason is that I was in Amsterdam when they were filming this.
What?
Yes.
That's so random.
Yeah. When I went on a month-long trip through Europe, our third city was Amsterdam, and we ended up being in Amsterdam at the same time as they were shooting Sense8. And actually also at the same time that Ryan Reynolds and Samuel L. Jackson were shooting The Hitman's Bodyguard.
Such a good movie.
Yeah, it's actually pretty great. So I saw them filming that. I did not see the Sense8s filming this. However, and we'll get to this scene, but when they walk out into the Amsterdam sunshine, I know exactly what that day's sunshine felt like. And it's just really special to me. So I watched this episode quite a bit. And the other reason why I watched this episode is that right before the second season premiered, Lana Wachowski brought the first two episodes of the season. So after the Christmas special, so last week's and this week's, brought them to Chicago for a screening. This was about 5 to 6 weeks before it was set to drop on Netflix. So we saw these episodes before everyone else did. We saw them in a theater. And we saw them with Lana and a bunch of the crew, and actually Daryl Hannah happened to be in town. And so she popped by as well to kind of hang out with everyone. So these episodes, this one specifically because of the Amsterdam stuff, it's really special to me. And I, for the last couple of months, actually have been trying to work it out with Mitch so that I could host on this episode.
Aww.
So it is very special to me, just for those things. And actually, we're going to include a link to a video in our show notes. And this video was taken from the live screening that I attended in Chicago. And it's for a Q&A with Lana after we had seen these episodes. So if you want to kind of watch Lana talk about these two episodes, both last week and this week, and just her love for Sense8 in general, be sure to check out our description. I put that link in there. It's not a professional or production or anything like that. I think it's just like the ACLU of Illinois' phone that did it, but it's really neat. So if you'd like to check it out, please do. All right. So that was my background on why I love this episode. So one of the first things that we see in this episode is actually something else I really, really love. We see Will taunting Whispers in the interrogation room. Now, if you'll imagine, at the end of last episode, when Will catches Whispers, and it's very intense and like really exciting, I'm sitting in a theater and everyone is just cheering and jumping up and down and like crazy. And then this scene, yeah, it was the most amazing thing in the world. And I always think of it now. And then this scene happens and you see Will and he's taunting Whispers. He's describing everything that Whispers is doing, saying, or like even kind of how he looks to the cluster as they're all sitting around drinking. He and Nomi are making demands of Whispers and just really undercutting him so hard to get what they want. And at this point, they win. And I love this scene. I love Will's sass in this scene. I love that he is not drugged up anymore because I hated drugged Will. How does everyone feel, newbies, how do you feel about Will's sort of newfound confidence or sort of like I told you so kind of confidence here? Like a gotcha.
Yeah, I definitely need to kind of work out the order of play a bit better in terms of like which part was a lot, like, you know, like obviously they were feeding incorrect information to Whispers on purpose to send him off the scent about where they were. And you know at first, and it was kind of like, you know, Whispers being like, oh, you think you're good, but you don't know. We know all this stuff. And Will's like, oh, yeah, you got me. And then he was like, haha, no, actually, we have so far ahead of you and we've got you. And so I'm just trying to work out which parts of what I've already seen, especially from the Christmas episode, like which parts of that were falsified, like where was real, like when they were in London, like, you know, which, how long has it been fake for Will and Riley, if you know what I mean? That's what's been confusing me. And so I kind of need to work out that, but I enjoyed the result very much. And yeah, it was interesting to see that Whispers is not like the top of the food chain, though I'm sure he will continue to make a lot of trouble. He's not technically the top of the food chain, that they were going, that they were going above his head and stuff like that.
Kristen?
I am so glad to see like a version of Will that's not drugged up and sad, because I like Will a lot and he I think kind of keeps the sensates, like he has this energy that he gives to all of them, and they all kind of have something that they, when they're kind of in the driver's seat, they all kind of seem to bounce. But Will is like, he's just got this like vibe to him and they all kind of jump on board and like, yeah, let's get the man kind of thing. And so him being so confident and like just sitting in that room and just giving Whispers every bit of terror that he can to try and feed back all of the terror Whispers has caused. Like you can just feel Will trying to like get one over on him, you know, even more so because of what he's done to everybody else and what he's done to other people. So I like Will this way. I love it. I'm all for it.
And Karen, how did it feel to sort of revisit this? I mean, I know how I feel about this episode, but I'm curious to see how you felt about this episode and the end of the last one.
Yeah, the last episode is one of my favorites of the entire series. So I was a little disappointed that I wasn't on, but I was incredibly sick. And also it was near a Comic-Con, so that was never going to happen. But I'm glad to be on this episode because this is a really good follow-up. And the end of last episode is one of the best gotcha moments I think I've ever experienced on television, because it's just so powerful to see Will go up against this really scary character and win and rub his face in it. I really love it so much. And the way that he and Nomi especially talk to Whispers here and go over his head and kind of send him along his way with a little pat on his head is just really great to see after all of the terrible things Whispers has been doing to them. And I don't think that Will is the leader of the group or anything. I don't think there is any one leader of the group, but he's definitely a driving force more so than some of the other characters, say Cafias, who I think tends to, you know, ironically enough, be in the passenger seat a lot. Even though he is helpful, he's not one of the people who kind of chases down the mystery of what's going on in this series. And I love the way that the group trusts Will, and I love the way that Will's instincts are spot on and so useful in a situation like this. And that moment when Whispers is like, oh, you know, just a Chicago cop, but I underestimated you, and Will's just like, yeah, I'm used to it. And there's a little bit of pride there, not really any arrogance, but, you know, he's pretty happy that he was able to get one over on Whispers. And it's just always nice for me to revisit that, because I think Will is a really good character, despite having the potential to be that sort of like straight white man, cardboard cutout white bread kind of character. He's a little bit more than that, and I can really appreciate that.
I liked that you touched on the fact that we've seen him be really physical and use his police officer skills in a very physical way in the past, but we haven't seen a lot of his like deductive reasoning and just like cop instincts. And so I think that's part of the reason why maybe we were so surprised with how this all turned out, because we had been underestimating Will, because we'd seen his physicality, but not, I guess, his mental abilities. So it was really great to see that at work here, instead of him just like getting out of zip ties or like picking a locker or something like that. Natalie?
Yeah, I really enjoyed all of this for him. And what Karen said about like him being sort of more of, you know, not the leader, but sort of the driving force. I think that is to do with the fact that he was the first one fully educated on the situation. Like, but that sort of raised a few questions for me about like, they're all in on this. You know, we've seen, you know, everyone's got their part to play. Carla is very involved in terms of the chemist, you know, like, you know, being the kind of medical and chemist, you know, involvement on her side, and then Cafias, and everyone's equally involved and taking turns contributing, but we haven't really seen like how much that some of the others who haven't dealt with BPO directly or haven't like had one-on-ones with Jonas. Can we assume that they're all like on board, that they know what a sensate is and that they know they are sensates, that they know what's going on with them? Because we haven't seen every single character actually learn that. And they've just sort of are, and some of them are just like, oh yeah, there's just people that talk to me and stuff. And can we assume that they all actually are on the same page about what their real situation is?
Yes, because they all share knowledge in the same way that they can all tap into each other's language skills,
right?
And experiences and feelings that way. I think you can safely assume here that they all share each other's knowledge.
Okay, yeah, I mean, because
we're not going to see Leto like hacking anything anytime soon.
Yeah.
That's maybe not his strength, but like base knowledge in terms of facts, I believe.
But they all know that they're a sensate, and they all know like all of that information about it, and that no one's like, oh, this is just crazy. Like, you know, because the speed before now, the speed of like how much being a sensate affected their life was very different for different characters. Like, you know, we've got some characters actually wrapped up in being hunted as a sensate, and some characters, it really isn't anything to do with their life outside of the moments that they're with the cluster. Like, and it's really, you know, not, they're sort of not on equal footing in terms of that. I mean, I'm sure that they are coming for all of them, but like their threat level, some of them have been really involved in figuring out the mystery, and then some are just like, along for the ride. And now that they're all actively working together and, you know, communicating and being together, I assume that they all have that information that, you know, everything that, you know, Will knows from Jonas and stuff like that. But just given that the speed of their education in the first season was so different between them, I'm just wondering if that has plateaued out now.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. And actually something that I sort of wanted to bring up a little bit later, but let's talk about it now. We're seeing the Sensates all together in a large group more often this season than we did in the previous season. Mm-hmm. I think the events of the season finale kind of brought them together in a way where now they very much know that they need to stick together. They very much know that there is someone hunting their kind, and if they can get to one or two in the cluster, like, everyone else is at danger or in danger. So they're all going to be working a lot more closely and interacting a lot more in large groups than they ever were before. And yeah, they do all have that sort of knowledge, and they're all going to be participating in the ways that they can.
And I love that, because they do all have these very definitive roles, or, like, you know, very, you know, combination of skills and experience and, you know, that gives them a leg up. But yeah, it's just, yeah, we just haven't obviously got to see every single person figure that out, but I suppose we can assume it.
Yeah, we can assume. Yeah. And actually, I want to talk more about kind of the knowledge that we're getting, as well as the roles that each of them play. So Will, one of the stipulations that Will gave to Kroom was that they wanted Jonas. They wanted to see Jonas. They wanted to talk to Jonas. And so good old Jonas comes back for another one of his famous info dumps. He gives us information that we already know, in that not just anyone could be a Sensate, that it's genetic. I think we kind of figure that out a little early on, that Sensates are Homo sensoriums. So they're not Homo sapiens, but we're pretty close. But he did give us something that we didn't have before, which is not technically scientific, but it's the fact that not every Sensate is happy being a Sensate.
Oh, about his cluster. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was one in one of Angelica's clusters of children that we saw wasn't happy with being a Sensate. So that's something, I mean, it's not something I don't think I ever thought about before it was pointed out here, but I can imagine that maybe you wouldn't want to read other people's minds in this way or be connected to other people. Or what happens if you have, like, a not great person in your cluster? Like, that kind of sucks. Mm. I don't know. But I also wanted to bring up this scene because we get all of the Sensates showing up to ask questions through Will and Nomi, because they're the ones who have connected with Jonas previously. And they're all asking sort of, like, practical questions, and Kala is just going for the science. And she says she has a list of questions that she wanted to ask, and she was just trying to ask all of these scientific questions. So I really loved having her involved in this. And like you were saying before, Natalie, she's using her strengths, her knowledge of science and medicine, to try to get at what's going on. But how did everyone feel about this scene and, like, the info dump that was sort of an info dump, sort of not? We get a little bit of background on other Sensates, like specifically the specific Sensates that are around or that were around, rather than just overarching details.
I really liked that. Well, I really like Jonas's kind of story about his Sensate father. And we don't really know how they make the cluster. I don't know. Like, if Angelica gave birth to the, you know, the August 8 cluster, does it have to be like a Sensate mother and father? I don't know how that happens. I don't know if we know the detail of, like, how the Sensates get activated as a cluster.
I don't think yet. We do.
It may, you know, may come up. I don't know if we actually know how that happens, but the fact that we see we see Jonas with his Sensate father and all of his 80 children, like his different clusters that he'd fathered, is so sweet and nice. And, yeah, but it just raises a lot more questions, and, like, the relationship that they have with you know, with other sensates outside of the, yeah, outside of the cluster. It's given a lot of food for thought, I guess. But I enjoyed it.
For the newbies, does it feel like it's time for us to explore other clusters or other sensates? Because we get two new sensates in here that are very much like a look at other clusters. Or, well, one for sure, and then Raoul Pascal, which is the one that Jonas had mentioned, who Leto actually knew.
Yeah, It's definitely interesting. Like, this cluster, while they're not all equally, like, I mean, like, Nomi and Will are a little more involved in this cluster than, like, say, Cavius. But, like, they just have more of an active interest in it rather than just being along for the ride and there to help when he can and whatever. It was interesting to learn that in past clusters that, yes, you had, you know, someone in Angelica's, you know, cluster that she had someone who didn't want to be there, who didn't want to be a sensei. And, like, I can understand, like, being... if you're a somewhat private, shy kind of person, that having seven or, you know, eight other people in your head who know your every thought and, you know, can basically have access to everything you know and feel would be a little unnerving and a little, it would definitely take some getting used to, and, you know, maybe you never would get used to it. So it was nice to see that while I love that our cluster is all very happy and content with what they are and how they are, it's kind of nice to see that not everyone is just going to embrace it. Like, sometimes you are going to have people who fight against it and have trouble accepting it because it is a very strange and different way to experience things.
Not for everyone.
Yeah.
For sure not.
It was interesting that that guy seemed to be, like, religious as well, like, that, like, it might be something to do with, like, that the evidence of, you know, Homo Sensorium or whatever might interfere with people's faith in terms of, like, you know, say Christians that don't believe in evolution and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's an interesting point.
I'm pretty sure that guy that they said hated it was, like, he was, like, holding, like, a Bible and a rosary, unless that was someone else.
Trying to think of what he was holding.
I'm pretty sure he was holding a rosary. Yeah. Like, okay. I remember noticing that too.
I am. So I think there's also a question there of, like, evident, what the evidence that sensatory offers is not in line with people who have very rigid belief systems. Mm-hmm. That's probably a big part of it as well.
And I mean, we've had discussions of religion previously. So this would just be another way to kind of bring that in. Definitely something to look out for. And then the last thing that I wanted to talk about with Will, because he had very much, as usual, a lot of, like, the driving scenes and the sort of info dump scenes of this episode. Will goes and he meets Kroom. So that's the guy from BPO. He meets him at the Rijksmuseum in Amsterdam. And the two of them sit in front of a Rembrandt painting, which the Rijksmuseum is actually built around. They sit and they talk about this painting and about how, you know, how we perceive things is always changing, and how evolution's always changing. And we find out that BPO originally wasn't an evil organization. That's not what it was. It was founded along the lines of, like, the thinking that humans and sensates are seen as dependent on one another. They need each other to survive. But then with events like 9/11, that changed everything. And so now the Homo Sensoriums can be seen as spies and terrorists, and sensates are a threat to secrecy because they basically make it impossible for secrets to exist, which is an interesting way of looking at it. How did this whole speech sit with everybody? Or how are we feeling about, I mean, he's dead now.
He's dead.
We'll get to in a second. But, like, just the way that Kroom and BPO were kind of talking about the Homo Sensoriums, how did it, I don't know, how did it affect you here?
I was very much like, oh, surprisingly not evil. Like, I was very much like, okay.
Agreed. You know, I kind of had the same initial thing. Like, oh, okay, I guess he's not a total, like, Scumbag. Got it. Thanks.
Yeah, like, you know, like, and the fact that he's Whispers superior and then Whispers has this out, you know, has this outlier, like, behavior. And it sounded like he was, like, kind of the head of, like, a resistance inside VPO or something like that in terms of making it a positive, you know, exploration of, you know, sensatory again. But, you know, make BPO great again, et cetera, except the opposite of that. Not only that, I was asking earlier, I was asking back in, you know, season one, I'm like, what is the problem? Why are they hunting them? Like, what's the big deal? Like, why is this a resource that people either want eliminated or weaponized? And
sure.
I did not think of his explanation here, but it makes complete sense because you can both either... You know, sensates that you can't control are a massive threat to that kind of security, and sensates that you can control are a massive resource to exploiting someone else's security. So it makes complete sense, and I did not think of it at all, but I sort of get it on a wider scale now, and it'll be interesting to watch the series again, like, with that in mind.
Yeah, I think it's hinted to a little bit when Nomi and Amanita go and meet that professor at the University of Chicago during his lecture. I think he, like, brushes past the idea, but we get it very much here. Like, you can't have a secret if someone knows you intimately. Like, you can't keep that from at least seven other people or however large your cluster is.
If someone in the president's office is a sensate, they can then either be exploited or choose to exploit, say, a confidentiality by having, you know, information passed to
them. Well, yeah, other positions, other countries.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the biggest problem is that they can't keep information private once you're activated, like once you being a sensate once you start to feel and understand and communicate with the other people, you can't keep secrets. So yeah, I think that's, especially since it's a worldwide phenomenon, like it's not like they're all Americans or they're all, you know, it would make it hard for a person who is a sensate to work in any sort of level of government because there are things that need to be kept private and quiet. And if, you know, it's not like you can tell someone's a sensate. So I can see why it could create problems for governments. I wouldn't have necessarily thought that they would, that a company like BPO would be looking out for the government's sake. Like, I would have expected this to come from a branch of the government for them to be hunting. But
well,
besides that, like, I kind of get it.
What Whispers is doing in terms of his ability to activate and control other zombie sensates is kind of feels like maybe that they are trying to, that the issue is less about eliminating sensates to protect security or that his ideas are, and more about weaponizing them to be used as spies, basically, to be like, you know, using sensates as spies as opposed to eliminating them from other people, you know, from accidental leakage. And that's kind of what I got from that. And I can imagine definitely that, you know, someone, you know, wanting that developed on behalf of someone, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think it definitely could have developed like a contract between the BPO and the government, in the BPO thinking like, we want to be able to weaponize these people. What's a good way to sell? I think they've had buyers come through because we saw Will see that one shell of a sensei kind of play a guy's throat like it was a violin in the last episode.
Yeah.
And so like we saw buyers in there. I don't remember if they were governmental or not, but perhaps like the way that they could get the research and get the funding in order to do this sort of like weaponized program was to talk about the fact that they're a threat and like make sure that the government or whoever sees these people as a threat so that they would give BPO their business. And it sort of like feeds itself. I mean, speaking of that, the episode ends on a similar action sort of note as the last one, but not nearly as happy. We see a woman who was in the museum all along attack and kill Croom by stabbing him with a paintbrush. And then she fights with Will. It's basically Whispers fighting with Will to the point where she stabs herself as well.
Yay!
Yeah.
This show is still just so much violent, more violent than I ever thought it was going to be.
Yeah, it shows a lot of humanity, and unfortunately a lot of that can be violent. Yeah. So that was an interesting ending to watch in a theater full of people as well. We had the same sort of like uproarious type of reactions, not quite so jubilant. I was sitting next to Eric Skull, which some of our listeners might know from MuggleCast. We were watching it in the theater together. And then we just kind of looked at each other. We're like, what? What is going on? And also, how do we wait until, wait like, I think it was 2 months at this point for the season to come out. So it's an interesting, interesting ending. Karen, did you... I always know now to look for the painter as we go through the museum or as we see Will walk through the museum to get in front of the Rembrandt painting. Did you notice her this time or did you remember what happened here? Did it take you by surprise?
No, I remembered. And I've gotten pretty good at in everything I watch, but particularly in Sense8 because it is such a rich show. To look at the background and to kind of see what might pop out because it's pretty good at setting things up ahead of time. And then, you know, it's a good show for rewatchable basically because you can go back and a lot of pieces fit together where, you know, before when you first watch it, it kind of takes you by surprise.
Yeah. And in this case, actually she was in the foreground. So ha. Before we move on to another one of our Sense8s, I wanted to throw a fun fact out here about this sequence. And according to the wiki, and I've heard this as well with interviews with Lana, in Amsterdam, the Sense8 production was the first production to film in the Rijksmuseum with the real paintings of Rembrandt. I'm sorry?
Wow.
Yeah.
Ever.
I believe so. Yeah, they have it locked down pretty hard because they want people to travel there. But Lana wanted to use these paintings. Lana did not want to have to like fake it or have to use a green screen or anything like that. And so Lana was told that the insurance would never allow her to film there. But she wrote an 8-page letter about what the Night Watch, which is the name of the painting, what that painting means to her and the importance of bringing art to the homes of those who are unable to go to the Rijksmuseum, and that the Rijksmuseum said yes and they allowed it to happen. So this is a very rare occurrence. This was the actual museum in Amsterdam. So cool.
That's very cool.
So cool. So fun fact for everybody. All right. Let's move on to Leto because Leto had quite a bit going on. It wasn't anything kind of having to do with BPO or the conspiracy that's sort of going on, but he has quite a bit of drama. And the first thing that we see with Leto was he visits his agents. And you can tell immediately as he walks in that room that something's not right. And basically they tell him that he lost a big role that he had coming up due to a morals clause that was in his contract, which not great. Not great at all. And I mean, we see that he's given a pile of other scripts, but I'm curious how you guys think that's going to turn out for him. Like he's had his apartment taken away. The movie premiere recently didn't go so well. He's having deals and movies pulled from him because of moral reasons. How are we feeling about the new pile of scripts or just for Leto in general here?
I'm sort of curious if handing him this pile of scripts is kind of like almost, it's like busy work. Like,
yeah.
Here, let's give him this pile of stuff that's not as good as the stuff we think he could and should be doing now, but this is what we can give him right now. So we'll have him read all of these. You know, I don't necessarily think that any of them are going to jump out at him. I don't think anything's going to be like, this is the project I need to do next. Like, I think this is busy work to keep him from like panicking now that things are going to be more difficult. And I'm hoping that, you know, that maybe this, the scandal of it all will die down a little bit and people will start to embrace him again. But I really think that them handing him the scripts was just kind of keeping him from panicking.
I'm surprised, sort of pleasantly, but also sort of don't trust it, that they're even pretending to still support him. Like, I don't feel like these team, like the way he's like, you know, they're like, Lido, you know, you're still our guy. They really seem to like have his back, but don't know how to handle it. But I'm like, but something about it still feels shady. Like, I don't know, like something.
The lady in the room felt really shady. Like the guy seemed to still honestly care and felt behind him. I really did think he was, you know, 100% looking out for Lido's best interest. But the lady that was sitting there, she just felt sketchy to me the entire time.
Yeah, she did not seem genuine to me.
Something was up. Either she's just having trouble hiding the fact that she knows this is going to be really hard, or she is falling in line with, you know, the morals clause people, and that's probably going to come to a head in the future if that's the way it is.
Yeah. We'll have to see how that goes. I mean, in also talking about Lido and dealing with the ramifications of him coming out, we see that he and Hernando are going apartment hunting. So they're trying to pick themselves up in another aspect of their life. And they're also very realistic about what their budget is, especially now that Lido is seeing studios pulling deals from him. So they go and check out one apartment. Lido doesn't like the fact that cars can drive underneath the bedroom in the one unit that they're in. And he and Hernando have a really great but short conversation where Hernando offers to change jobs, but Lido is very much adamant that they both do what they love. Which I really love that scene between the two of them. It kind of, we see them interact as a couple frequently, but we don't see a lot of these sort of conversations where they're sort of negotiating what's going on with them or negotiating something different. So I don't know if this stuck out to anyone else while they were in the middle of that apartment, but I really do love that scene.
Well, it's just so delightfully like normal. Like, these are the conversations that any couple would have. Like, when you're living together and you're sharing expenses and Hernando wants to, you know, wants to stay a teacher, he could be a museum curator and make three times what he's making now, but it's not his love. It's not what he wants to be doing. And I love that Lido is so, like, he's supportive and wonderful about it and is like, no. If I'm doing what I love, I want you to do what you love and we'll figure it out. Like, we'll find the money, we'll find a solution for our problem. And so, yeah, I just love that it's just this wonderful couple talking about, you know, how they're going to make this work, and finances may not be perfect, but yeah, I love that it doesn't feel special or weird. It's just them.
And I mean, they don't always have to talk it out to know how each other is feeling, to be fair, because all they have to do is look at each other and look at Daniela and look at the second apartment that they see and immediately both decide that they want to move in with Daniela.
Yeah, that is really cute.
So cute. I love it. I don't remember if someone chose it. Oh, yeah. Kristen, yeah. When we get to it, your favorite line was my runner-up because it was from this scene. Oh, so cute. Anybody... any reactions to them moving in together? Good thing, bad thing? Seems natural.
I'm just glad to see them kind of like make it official, because she's kind of been hanging around and I don't think any of the newbies really knew what to think. Like, are they actually a couple or is she just their friend who hangs out with them a lot? Or, right. You know, she was his beard for a while. So it was like, not really sure what Danielle's role is in all of this. It's nice to see her like, be welcomed. It's like, okay, you can come live with us. Let's, you know, let's all live together. We are awesome. Like, yeah. So I did appreciate them kind of making it official that they're all going to stick together throughout all of this.
Natalie, how are you feeling about Dani at this point? I don't remember the last time we had talked about her.
I enjoy it all. I think it's really nice to kind of, I don't know, like open up your family in that way. I don't really understand like the relationship dynamic in terms of whether it is like, you know, like a Three Musketeers all for one friendship or whether it is more than that, you know, what the actual dynamics are between the three of them. But I do feel like that it's kind of a mirror of the sensatory in a way. It's like, you know, that a group has grown to exist and that the bonds within it can exist in different ways, but it becomes unconditional, if you know what I mean. And so it's like Lido is no longer just in a relationship with one person. He has like, you know, Hernando was already his plus one for life and now he has a plus two for life, you know, no matter what form that takes. And I really appreciate, like, in society where we kind of put different values on, like, you know, marriage versus friendship versus, like, you know, family and siblings, like, the importance of different relationships of, like, I really appreciate, like, the opening up of that idea to show that, you know, to show that, like, your values about companionship or that how a relationship can grow to include more than two people, not necessarily in like a sexy way, but maybe it is, I don't know, is a positive thing. Like that we've kind of honed society down to being like people paired off as, you know, couples or even just being alone, and that communal group living and depending on a communal group love as a family, not in kind of a parent-child family, but as a group, is very rare for like adults in today's society. That's not really how people live. And I really appreciate that this kind of shows that, I guess.
And in a very cute way.
Mm.
All right. That's it for Lido this week for the most part. Let's move on to Cappius really quickly. He had, I think, one scene to call his own, but it kind of gives us a little bit of a sense, perhaps, of where his character might go this season. Basically, Cappius wants to go and get water for his home, for his mother. The freshwater cart comes and realizes that it's getting far too expensive, and the seller kind of talks a little about how the people in power are demanding the prices be higher. And that's kind of where we see Cappius. I don't know if there's too much to break down here yet, but I think it's worth mentioning.
I think the water guy said something about it being election season. So I think, yeah, it has something to do with like trying to convince people to vote for so-and-so because he's going to bring the prices down even though they're artificially high and all of that. It makes me wonder if that's coming up, like that we'll see more of that.
Hashtag no comment on that. Yeah, I just wanted to note that we did see Cavius, but I mean, he didn't get much of an emphasis here. So I guess it's probably a good thing that Caitlin isn't on this episode. Although she, as of right now, isn't as much of a fan of this new Cappius as she was of the old one. And so, Karen, how did you feel about, because we haven't talked to you in quite a bit, how do you feel about the new Cappius? Even though we don't see him much here, I want to know your thoughts about this new actor.
It's a bit weird because the original actor, Melamine, was in the Maze Runner movie, so I kind of fell in love with him because of that, but considering, you know, the fact that he was discharged is maybe the nicest way to say it from the show, I don't particularly feel bad, because if they had problems with him, then they had problems with him, and the overall show and the happiness of the cast as a whole is more important. I think this new Caphias isn't quite as innocent looking or doe-eyed. And I think for certain scenes that kind of helps a little bit to lean into maybe some of the harder edges, because as we've said in the past, he doesn't have the easiest life, even though he takes it all in stride so easily. But I think that this new Caphias has his own merits, and it's still a bit strange for me to see the new Caphias because the first one is so ingrained in my mind, and that is the one that we started off with. So I don't know that I'll ever like him quite as much as the original, but I definitely don't have a problem with him. And I kind of liked his tongue-in-cheek introduction. Mm-hmm. And I've liked some of the scenes that he's had in season two quite a lot. So I'm happy to kind of just roll with it.
And Natalie, I don't think we got your thoughts on him either, if you have any.
I mean, this episode, not so much. Right. I liked his involvement in Sun's escape, which we haven't got to yet. But but in terms of his own story, yeah, I feel like it's sort of taken a bit of a pause. Like, I still don't really understand, like, last week, except for the idea that it was mirroring, you know, Leto at the premiere. I don't really understand why they were trying to interview him about having a bus. Like, I'm like, I don't know if that's, like, a big deal or, like, you know, whether that lady was investigating, like, anything about Silas or anything like that. But
I think she was.
I don't really get what's going on, like, for him, really.
Yeah. Just to interject, I think the sort of reason for her interview was because he's like a local hero. So it started off as like a local hero kind of piece, but I think she was interrogating him with the argument in mind that he basically is putting like a white hero on a pedestal and kind of promoting the sort of like white savior sort of thing. And then his comeback was like, no, I'm taking these different elements. I think that was sort of the parallel. It wasn't an even parallel, but I think that's what was going on there, if I recall. Yeah.
I mean, I don't really know what's going on with, you know, if Silas is still living in his house or whatever. Like, it feels like that's more important, but
I haven't gotten to it yet.
Yeah, but I don't know.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll just wait to see what happens with Caphias. I did just want to check in with you two because we hadn't talked about him much.
Yeah, in terms of the new Caphias existing, I don't know if this is the first episode. I can't remember if this is the first episode I was on this season or not, or if I was on the two-hour one. I genuinely can't remember. I don't think
you were on the Christmas episode. I think that was Brittany and Caitlin.
In that case, yeah, I agree in terms of the physical actor switch. I think I knew that it was happening. I knew that it was going to – I knew that that was a thing that had happened. I didn't really know the details. I listened to that episode that you guys did because I edited it. So, yeah, I did get the details from you on the spot. Like, you know, I you know, immediately after watching it when I edited about – the potential reason for the changeover. And I, you know, there's a lot to take into consideration there. Like, if you are talking about the stuff that is completely on screen, like not taking any consideration, any personal reasons for why the actor changed, yes, certainly the actor in the first season had a presence about him that I don't necessarily feel that this one does. I don't know if it's just what's established in the role, but he did have a very one-of-a-kind, unique face and performance. So I don't know, it kind of feels like that would have been hard to replicate, but I'm sure they're doing the best of what they can with the situation, a very odd situation at hand it must have been.
Yeah, I can't imagine. Wouldn't want to go through it myself, whatever it was. But yeah, let's move on from Caphias because he doesn't feature a ton, and we'll get to him actually in a little bit. But before we start talking about the stuff that happened with Sun, because that was a lot, let's check in with Wolfgang really quickly. So basically what's going on with him in this episode is he actually meets with the King of the North. I can't remember his name, but I remember that that's what he was called at some point.
Yeah.
And so the sort of importance of Wolfgang's storyline in this episode is that his storyline introduces another sensate from a different cluster. And we kind of explore what their interactions can look like. And her name is Lila, or that's how they pronounce it. But it is spelled Lila. So we can have another Lila to sort of hate on, because of why not? Yeah. Preliminary thoughts on Lila and her role here. She's very much the seductress, but we can tell she's intelligent. I don't know.
My question is this just her fucking with him, or does he, or is this like part of, is Mr. King of the North in on this? Like, does he,
sure.
like, does he know that he's the, you know, is this like a tool in his arsenal? Like, does he know about sensates and he is, you know, sending out his pet sensate to exploit like Wolfgang, or is this just like a personal bit of,
it seems like, you know, like, it seems a little bit too coincidental to just be a coincidence. Like, it makes you wonder whether this guy has come up against sensates before and he has this, you know, right-hand woman who is there and can kind of identify sensates for him. So maybe that's a thing. I don't know. It just, it seemed like way too coincidental that he walks into this meeting with this guy who happens to head up one of the four sectors of, was it Germany or just the city? I don't remember. But like the, you know,
Berlin, I think, just
of Berlin. Berlin. Okay. That's what I thought. Yeah. Like he's in the presence of this guy who he knows, you know, wields a lot of power in Berlin and like just happens to have another sensate there. It's kind of, you know, I'm curious as to how she knew he was. Like if two sensates walk by each other on the sidewalk, can they just feel that person is, even though they're not in the same cluster? Or like I know they can connect via like Jonas, we've seen that happen, but do they automatically know? And for some reason she seemed to know.
She did seem to know.
So it's all very confusing, just kind of a theme.
I mean, if you haven't picked that up by now, I can't do anything for you. The only other thing I wanted to touch on about their interactions, I guess, has to do with consistency. So I am not sure if it bothered anyone else or if anyone else had questions on it, but the consistency of how visiting works always sort of fails for me. It confuses me. So to set this up, in their interactions, they're technically visiting with each other when they're on that rooftop and having dinner and sort of seducing each other.
But their bodies are still in the same seat. It's very weird.
Like, they're both, when we look at them as humans, let's say, when we view the table as humans, neither of them are moving. They both look actively engaged in the conversation that's happening. But we get, when we get the homo sensorium view, I guess, when they're like visiting each other, they're like all up on each other. And you could tell that like the one who is being visited is moving and reacting. But when we go back to human view, we don't see that at all. And like it's not even weird. They don't look like they're doing anything weird. Whereas like Will has made out with thin air before.
Or like Jonas embracing his father on the floor of the train station and he's hugging nothing. Yeah.
Yes.
Or like Sun fighting someone in her cell, but she is fighting no one. Yeah. That it confuses the hell out of me because sometimes the sensei is in their physical environment and they're interacting with other people, with the other sensates, but you cannot see that interaction. It's like Sun actually talking to the other sensates and her cellmate standing next to her hearing her conversation and Sun having to excuse it as her talking to herself. But yet Wolfgang can be making out with the girl sitting 2 feet from him and nobody knows. So I'm like, it's very confusing.
So I have a theory.
Yeah.
I think
I think in terms of reality, I think in terms of production, it's just like whatever they want at the time, to be honest. But I think that if you were going to, I think that the consistency is probably just based in what they need or what they want to show at the time without it having a lot of internal consistency. But alternate theory, perhaps it is a very clever ploy akin to, do you remember, I don't remember if the movies really touched on this a lot, but Harry Potter universe books, you know, develops the training in nonverbal spells. Mm-hmm. Basically, in terms of when you start out using a power, you know, your power in this case, magic or sensatory, you need to physically act it out. You need to, you know, like do a motion and say a word to direct the energy, to help direct the energy that makes it happen. But as you become more skilled, as you hone your power, as you understand more how it works and become more powerful, you can manifest a lot of things just inside your head. Like you can do a nonverbal spell by merely thinking it inside your head and not having to do any outward movement or speaking or anything like that. And so my kind of theory here is that like sensate, maybe the more experienced you are at being a sensate, the more you get used to activating the parts of you that can do those things, the less external it has to be. Like Will making out with thin air because he did not, like, you know, he had very, very little experience with visiting, and that's for it to be real, for it to actually be real, he had to be directing it outwardly. Whereas if you are extremely experienced at it, you can keep it all internal.
I do not necessarily
think that this is like accurate in the universe, but if I was going to like make up a theory to kind of explain away the frustration of the inconsistency, that would be it.
It does make sense now that you're kind of talking about that, because in the scene, Wolfgang says like you have to welcome it. Like if you, he says something like if you welcome the interaction rather than like fighting against it, resisting it, then you'll show more in the physical world as opposed to just in the homosensorium world. Like he kind of mentions it in the scene. So I wonder if, yeah, that's basically what they're getting at, that as you go about living your sensate life, eventually you'll have better control over what people see and what you experience and how that interacts.
Mm. I like that. I like those ideas. The show is so high concept, and I don't expect them to stick to it all the time. But there are certain things that bug me, but I do like those explanations for it. So thank you. Any other thoughts about Wolfgang or the King of the North or Lila Lila?
I hate Lila a lot.
Yeah. Well, I'm not the biggest fan of her.
I'm pleasantly surprised that Wolfgang is involved in all of this. I thought that the King in the North approaching Felix to give him the club was him trying to, like, win Felix off Wolfgang, like, to destabilize Wolfgang rather than, like, having something cooperative. And maybe that is yet to come. I don't know. Maybe I've got ahead of the curve. But that was when he offered Felix the club, I definitely saw that as him trying to seduce Felix and destabilize Wolfgang.
So to split them up rather than win Wolfgang over by winning Felix.
Yes. Yeah. But maybe that's not happening, or maybe, you know, maybe this guy like, but this guy now, he does seem to just want to go in on it with them, like, you know, the money laundering and stuff, that he genuinely wants to have a community of, you know, kings of who work together. So I don't know. I think Wolfgang should stop doing crime, but, you know, that's just me.
That's a lot to ask, Natalie. All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on that for sure. Let's put a pin in that and move into the last two characters that we have yet to talk about. One kind of feeds into the other. Nomi, or Nominita, thinks they're about to have a normal night and they plan to eat carbs and it's going to be great. And that's all that we really see them doing. They're about to get ready and like have some fun. But then Sun's storyline happens and Sun needs everyone's help because shit goes down. So Sun is fetched from her cell in the middle of the night. And Nomi immediately catches on that these aren't real guards, as is Will. He knows they're tasers. Nobody else is carrying tasers. And they all put it together that those guys are trying to kill her. And so they take her into a room that's kind of far away from everyone else, everything else. And in this sequence, in them attacking Sun, we see it multiple times, but we see the effect of pain on the Sensates and how it kind of ripples across. And I can't remember if we've seen it previously or not. I think we've seen it maybe once before, but we get it twice here. And with seeing our Sensates come together more often and seeing them kind of like interchange a lot more than we have before, it's becoming very clear how interconnected they are, to the point where like if one of them feels pain, even just enough to like rattle them, then all of them feel it. I think that's worth pointing out.
You know, Whispers mentioned that, you know, was coming in terms of when he was like chasing Will and Riley. He's like, you know, you guys know what it's like to have sexy time pleasure together. Imagine feeling each other's pain. And so, yeah, I imagine that that is definitely something that can be used against everyone, as well as a nasty side effect of an individual incident.
Yeah. And I mean, they're all affected at different times. I don't think, for instance, I don't think Kala's affected by the first taser, but the second one is when she like smashes all the things that she's working on and then drops to the floor. So I'm not sure if that was cinematic reasons or if they just kind of had it on delay there.
Well, and I kind of wonder if it has something to do with like Will and Nomi and even Caphias were like the first ones to feel it. And I wonder if it's because they've been like purposely connected. They were closer to Sun in that moment because they were there for her immediately when things started to happen. And Kala was a little more removed because she was in her own world focused on work and doing other things. And since Nomi and Will responded, like the rest of them may not have felt needed at that moment. And then as the pain like continues, it kind of ripple effects and affects everyone else.
It's like because, a telephone. Like it's like someone's calling, you know, like Will picks up on the first ring, but then like everyone else's phones keep ringing, you know, until like.
Yeah. And once it gets loud enough, like they just pick up without even knowing it. And that's when Kala gets hit with the second taser. And yeah, that's kind of what it felt like for me. Just, she may not have felt the first one, but, you know, after a certain amount of time, she's not going to be able to help it. It's going to affect her too.
Yeah, I am still not necessarily 100% sure why these dead Sensates still appear, like Angelica and like Sarah Petrelli, because obviously we had that in the last episode. And so I'm not really sure why the ghost Sensates are still around, or like I don't feel like that Will's meeting with Nomi's meeting with Sarah's mother really gave me, maybe I just didn't understand it, like why the ghost ones are still there. So when Angelica appears here, I'm very confused.
I think it has something to do with like memories, and like their consciousness is so linked with their cluster that when you're attached to someone who was in their cluster, like the it's almost like
never dies. The consciousness
Yeah, it's almost like a shadow consciousness or something, that like it's not their active mind or soul or whatever is connected, but that they linger, like that they're, the spirit almost tends to linger. So it's not like you're not only seeing them in memory, like they can interact, but it's not necessarily as full fledged as if they were alive and still with you.
Mm.
That's like kind of what it seems like.
Oh, God.
Like a Horcrux.
But not as evil.
Multiple people died by paintbrush in this episode.
Yeah.
I assume that's intentional.
Yeah. There's a lot of, well, there's a lot of stabbing in this episode,
to be fair.
So, yeah. Sun ends up getting overpowered, and she ends up getting strung up, and it's really hard to see, in the same way that we've seen all of the Sense8 flash through important moments in the past episode and the episode before, whether that be in the speech, whether that be sitting in the car looking at graffiti that kind of points out the worst word I've ever been called. This time we see a lot of them swinging, which is really hard to watch. But luckily we don't have to watch it for too long because Sun's friend Ming Jung appears. Lady so smart, realizes that something's up, stabs a guy, and allows Sun to be able to overpower the rest of the guards and get them out of that situation. And all I can say is I forget that that happens every time. I can never remember how Sun gets out of it. even though I know where she goes sort of next, I can never remember how she gets out of it. So every time I see Ming Jung appear and just like stab the guy, it's a very root-worthy moment for me. This is a really hard scene. And actually, I do also want to point out that this scene was filmed on a stage in Berlin. And Jamie Clayton, who plays Nomi, specifically found it emotionally very hard to shoot and couldn't watch the rest of her castmates do it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, for good reason. It's not... I like the action that comes out of it. And it's an interesting set piece once they can get everything moving and like things are moving. But when they're just kind of in danger and hanging there, it's very hard to watch. Karen, how do you feel watching this second time, the third time?
It's always really difficult. I think that it's incredibly well done. And I think part of the pain of watching the scene like this is that we see every single one of them go through what Sun is going through. And I think you kind of need that context because it sort of lingers on the scene a lot longer. And that's not necessarily a good thing because it is so difficult to watch, but you kind of do need that context to understand that they all feel what she's feeling. And I always... enjoy is not the right word, but I always look for the details. Like when Wolfgang finally gets out of the noose, you can also see the marks around his neck, just like you can see it on Sun's. And it really drives home that these people feel exactly what Sun is feeling in that moment. And as tragic as that is, it really shows you how connected they are, for better and for worse. And I just like that they helped her get out of it, because this was, I mean, Sun can take care of herself, but like these people anticipated a lot of what she was capable of and were very careful to have tasers and to be able to get her into a position where they could kill her. And if it weren't for the other Sense8s, I think that would have happened. And so, yes, it's very difficult to see her go through this, to see all of them go through it. But at the same time, it just drives home once again how connected they are and how much they can each help each other and what their skills are as individuals and how that comes together to save the whole. And I think, despite it being really sad and very difficult to watch, by the end of it, you're kind of given this hope that they can take care of themselves and then nobody's going to be able to hurt them as long as they're together. And I really like that message.
As long as their friends are there too.
Yeah. I know they didn't they didn't really get into this, but I just kind of wanted to put in my two cents. We don't know who kind of sent them or where these guys came from. They're like, Nomi notices that they're not real guards, so it doesn't seem like it's the prison who sent these guys to kill her. So it makes me wonder if this isn't her brother sending people to kill her. I just wanted to throw it out there in case that's what is the thing, because it was the first thing that came to my mind is, you know, she had these lawyers who attacked her last episode or the episode before, I forget, recently. And they were sent there to basically take her down, and they failed. So the next step is middle of the night, send somebody to take, you know, to kill her. I don't know if we know that it's her brother, but that was my first instinct. And I know this is probably going to be a hashtag no comment. But.
Yeah, I assume that's the only... Well, I would also assume that it is, you know, what other threats are there against her out there? Unless it is BPO, like, you know.
Yeah.
Which it may be, but I don't know.
But they wouldn't want to kill her. They would want to scoop her.
Lobotomize her.
Bypass her brain, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Karen, I don't think it's a spoiler. I think you're supposed to assume that it is her brother, okay. Because it was her brother's lawyers.
Right.
Basically.
And later they kind of say like, your brother's going to expect you to go straight for him. And I think that's kind of they don't spell it out for you.
Right.
But I think that's the leap that you're supposed to take.
Yeah, okay. I don't think it's a spoiler to kind of confirm that. Thank you for backing me up on that. I don't want to spoil anyone on anything, but I
no.
It's the logical reason.
Yeah,
it's the logical leap to make. But I just wasn't sure if it was ever like if she ever said like, "Oh, I know this is my brother,"
right,
or something, and I couldn't remember, so I figured I'd throw it out there.
Yeah, sure. I like it. And so the last part about Sun's story that I just wanted to touch on, well, I guess there's sort of two last parts, but so she breaks out with the cluster's help. And this whole time, her friend Ming Jung is kind of looking on both in awe and confusion, because I'm assuming she's seeing like Sun throw the keys to each other or to herself and Sun argue with herself about like starting a bust, you know? And one of my favorite shots actually in this episode is, again, all the clusters kind of working together, and we see them tiptoeing together through the parking lot.
Yes. Oh my God.
It doesn't last very long, but it always makes me chuckle because they're just, I love seeing them together in this way, and the way that they're shooting this now that they can put them all together, they're just having so much fun with it, and you can tell.
Oh yeah. Like, it cracked me up that they're all sneaking. Like, the only person who needs to sneak across the parking lot is Sun. The rest of them are there with her, but nobody else can see them. And yet they're all tiptoeing across the parking lot. And I'm like, this is brilliant. It is. It's just really great.
I love it. I love it so much. So, yeah. So then Van Damme, the real Van Damme, or the real Van Damme? I don't know what Cappius is. Van Damme comes and he jumpstarts that bus and gets them out of there. Nomi, Amanita, and Bug, excuse me, work to get Sun out, give her clearance. Lido kind of sweet talks the guard there because Lido, and they're off.
But why would, I'm trying to think why they would accept her driving the bus full stop. Like, if she did she change into another uniform or that? But then we had, like, not to compare it to, like, Orange Is the New Black, which I've only seen part of it, but I know they have, like, prisoners who have, like, bus driving duty to take people around on errands, I guess, as well. So that's very confusing.
I'm assuming they didn't have a video feed.
That was what I thought. I thought it was just
audio.
Audio, okay. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I don't think it was a video feed because then she would have most likely been caught.
Just the two of them, or was there other people in the bus as well?
Just the two of them.
What about their friends?
Well, they didn't follow like Ming Jung did.
Yeah, so, she came to the rescue. The others didn't, so
they couldn't go back for them. It would have been too risky.
Yeah.
I mean, they just murdered and hurt a bunch of people, so they got to get out of there. So, yeah, they get out of there. And the last thing I want to note here is they go and hide with Meng Zheng's, basically her best friend, her ride or die. And before the episode ends, we get yet another, like, sad, depressing tale of a woman done wrong by a man and, like, what she does in the aftermath. Which seems to be the theme of all of these women who are in prison, all of their stories. And this woman was in prison and she's since got out, but like, this is her story too. And I'm not sure if anyone else sort of picked up on it or how we're feeling about that, but it's just like, I'm not frustrated by it. I'm interested by it, but it's at the same time, like, how many of these stories are going to be about like just terrible men, but in a way where it's like, men are terrible, so it's sort of predictable. I don't know how I feel. Tell me how I feel.
I think that, you know, all things are probably about men being terrible.
Fair. I think we'll get more of this friend's story in the next episode, because I can't remember how much she talked about here or like the ramifications of what happened to her. But I think it's just interesting to note that like yet another woman has like this awful story. And, like, women are being put in jail for these stupid things. So, any final word on Sun and her story? She's out of jail, guys. She made it. Not legally, yeah, that's crazy. But she made it.
That was
the Does that mean she has to be on the run now?
Basically, yeah. I have to say, that was, like, the least number of gates I've ever seen a person have to escape to get out of a prison. It was like she had to get down a hall, out the door, into a bus, and through one gate, and she was clear. And I was like, that's incredibly, like, unsecure. Like, that is, I'm glad it was that easy. Because, yeah. Like, you know, you're used to seeing, like, you know, Shawshank Redemption. He has to, like, dig a tunnel out of the, or dig, you know, dig a hole into the wall and out and all of that. So it just seems like, this was really not as hard as it could have been.
Probably for the best.
Yeah.
For Sun.
For sure. But I could not help but notice. It was like, wow, one gate and she's in the clear.
Definitely. Point taken. All right. So that about wraps up this episode. Before we kind of look to future, I want to go and see what our favorite scenes and favorite lines are. So I've talked about it before and I won't bang on about it anymore, but my favorite scene is when the Sensates emerge into the sunshine of Amsterdam, because I know what that exact sunshine feels like and it feels great. Karen, what is your favorite scene?
My favorite scene is Sun's escape, because even though it's super tragic and hard to watch, I just think it's really powerful. And I'm glad she's out of prison.
And Kristen, your favorite scene?
Mine is the opening scene and like Will getting in Whisper's face and how all of that goes down, because it was really just fulfilling and satisfying to watch him just be so confident and finally get Whisper's like set aside so he can feel free, for even if it's just for a little while.
Love it.
I didn't write mine in because we were already talking, but it is very in line with Kristen's quote, which was them, Lito, Hernando, and Danny deciding to get the apartment together, like, you know, her sort of coming in like it's assumed and then being like it's overstepping, and everything about the way all of that was negotiated. I really like it and enjoyed that. I really loved Will at the beginning also reading Whispers and stuff as well. But obviously it does not end as satisfyingly as he is back on his bullshit, as the kids say.
Yes, he is back on his bullshit. I like that. And for favorite lines, my favorite line was from Amanita, and it's just carbs. Yes, because I feel that every day of my life. Karen, your favorite line, please.
Mine's kind of very similar to yours in that it's the scene where Sun arrives at Mrs. Cho's with her friend and they just start stuffing their face, which, first of all, I love that they showed that because, like, women aren't shown a whole lot, like, eating a lot of food with such gusto. And for some reason, that just sits really well with me every time I see the scene. But it's Sun with her mouth absolutely full of food, just going, oh my God, that's so good. And I just really relate to that.
I will say one thing that probably you and Danielle may relate to, and Kristen, possibly. That sort of inelegance about food is one of the reasons I really love Peggy Carter, because she is like,
yes. Yeah.
She's like brutal. I know what you're talking about.
She's like a brute. Like, that's everything about Peggy and the way that she kind of experiences
her fighting style and everything.
It's really like not quote unquote womanly. Like, it's not graceful. It's not like, she's a brute in everything that she does. And I really love that. So yeah, she's kind of like, has a lot of gusto. Yeah. Anyway, that's not to do with this show, but given the topic of the day.
Yes. No, I feel that so hard. Kristen, your favorite line, please.
Yes, mine is from Hernando, and it is from that scene that Natalie talked about with them deciding to get the apartment. And Hernando says, Danny, 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 I think that the fact we can all fit in the tub means it must be ours.
Yes.
And it's just so, yeah, it's them painting their toenails. It's them hanging out in the hot tub. It's, they're all going to be together, and I like it.
Love it so much. Natalie, yours?
In terms of quotes, I really loved at the beginning, again, when Will is just like owning Whispers, and he was like, when Whispers is saying, you and I have more in common than any sapien, and he was like, really? That's all you've got? Little sensorium pride? Give me some pound, brother. And it's just like, I just love that they have this confidence now, though, again, like I said, it ends up not as tidy as that inspirational first scene would have liked it to be.
All right. So those are our favorite scenes and our favorite lines, as well as our comments about the episode. But we want to know how you felt about this episode. Did you love it? Not so much? Come tell us. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at re_watchable. Or you can come find us on Tumblr. We're at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And if you would be so kind as to leave us a review on iTunes, 5 stars is preferable, but I mean, we'll take anything, I guess. But if you rate us 5 stars on iTunes, then Karen will help you escape from prison.
This is 100% a thing that I can do.
Yes, mm-hmm. I would not doubt that for a second. So if you think you might need a little bit of help in the future, go exit out of this episode you're listening to right now, like real fast, pause it, close out, go to iTunes, and just hit the 5-star button. It literally, like, you take your finger and you hit it, you tap like maybe 4 times and you're done.
So literally a get out of jail free card.
Literally get out of jail
free card. Forever.
I mean, that's a pretty good deal, guys. Pretty good deal. So please do that for us. And speaking of feedback, we have a couple pieces of feedback really quickly. Let's see. Kristen, will you take this first tweet, please?
Sure. The first one comes from This Is the Queer Place at Nurse Brack, and says, Icelandic yogurt is better than Greek yogurt. That is greater than sign.
Yeah, he did the greater than. So
yeah, a little greater than sign. I can't say I know the difference between them, so I'll take your word for it.
Is that the special thing that they were having in the last episode? The yogurt skier.
So.
Yeah.
That Riley's father brings.
Yeah, I cannot say I've experienced this either, but does that mean Riley's father knows the truth about what's going on with them? Or is he just like,
I think he is the secret agent,
man.
He is the secret agent. I think Riley asked him for some help, and he's just kind of a her ride or die, so he's not going to question anything and just do whatever she wants. Possibly.
I don't care for yogurt, full stop, but, you know, never mind.
I've grown to love Greek yogurt recently. I've never had Icelandic yogurt, though. I would try it.
Natalie, would you mind getting the second piece of listener feedback, please?
Oh, if I have to. this is
Oh, what does that mean? You are an Avatar person. That's why I chose you. I know nothing about
that's it. True. This is from at Joits, and it says, "Hey, rewatchable, thought the Zutara fans among you would like this." And it is a link to an Instagram post of a fantastic real life Zuko and Katara cosplay, like with a scar, like a very realistic live action cosplay, which is great, fantastic cosplay of apparently like a professional actor. I guess he's verified on Instagram, whoever the man is doing it. And the only issue for me is that I freaking hate this ship. And always have and always will. It's fine. Sorry. Don't worry about it. It's totally fine. He also has another picture. I've just clicked on his link, and he clearly cosplays Zuko quite a lot, and he's got a picture of him with a girl as Azura. Yeah, so Zuko and Azura, that like together in back-to-back, like as the Fire Nation siblings, and it's all very good cosplay. We have some very big Zutara fans on this podcast. I am really not one of them, but it is a source of much entertainment to taunt me about Zutara and taunt each other about such things. If Caitlin was here, she would mic drop and leave if you asked her to do that. But I will at least take it it with some humor. Yeah.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
It is a great cosplay, so we'll link to that for future fans or for, you know, past listeners of Avatar who might want to imagine what the new series might look like, I guess.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Joyce, for sending that in.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're just about wrapping up here, but before we go, it is now time for Kristen's Contemplations and Fisher's Forecast. For Sense 8, Season 2, Episode 4, Polyphony? Polyphony?
Yeah, Polyphony.
I think it's Polyphony, yes.
It's Polyphony, as in, like, the polyphonic, yeah.
Hashtag nailed it.
Yeah.
I know what I'm talking about, guys. Yeah. It's all good. Please, take it away.
Do you want to go first, Kristen, or?
I mean, yeah. So, I don't know what the title of this episode has to do with anything, but I mean, we're definitely going to be dealing with this, you know, Whispers sending this chick to kill Will and him not actually being out of the picture like we thought. So that's definitely going to come up next episode. And I'd imagine, yeah, I mean, Morpher's son too, we're going to be seeing her on the run, or whether they stay with the friend that they're kind of lodging with at the moment while they wait for Chinese government to kind of come down on them. I don't know. It's going to be crazy, that's for sure.
I will take the other angle and actually break down the title, because the word polyphony means more than one sound or more than one tune playing at once in discord. Whereas like symphony, the etymology is like in like kind of the, like set pop phony is Greek root sound, and then the symphony is like sounds played together. Polyphony means sounds played at the same time, not together. So two different tunes being played at the same time that have nothing to do with each other. So I assume it's going to be dealing with, in some way, you know, different threads trying to overtake each other in some way. I don't know. Usually these titles are a quote that happens within the episode. I can't remember where this episode that we just had, its title was. Was it in Jonas's speech, or was it in Croom's, or was it
are they not doing that anymore? I think it's in Jonas's speech.
I was going to say, I definitely don't remember hearing
so
it.
So this one.
Yeah.
I think it's in Jonas. No. I think it's in Croom's speech to Will when he's explaining the museum.
I think you're right.
And the real truth about BPO. Yes. So here it is. So what it was is he was talking about the founding of BPO. And Ruth Sadawi said she believed Sapiens and Sensorium to be obligate mutualisms dependent on one another for survival. So it means basically that, like, each part needs to exist for the other one to continue. So polyphony will, you know, likely be something you described either in reality or as a metaphor by someone in the next episode, but the meaning is threads of different sound, you know, or, you know, threads of different story in this case, possibly going at the same time, not in any kind of sync with each other, just existing at the same time. So that is what it means. So thematically, that's my take.
Very interesting, for sure.
All right. Well, we will leave it there and we will see how that pans out for you, Natalie and Kristen. Mm. Thank you for your contemplations and forecasts. Mm. And we will just have to go watch the next episode, Polyphony, to find out what happens. Mm. But that's it for today. We'll be back here, same time, same place next week to discuss that episode. But until then, I'm Danielle.
I'm Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And I am Natalie.
And we'll see you later, everybody.
Bye.
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 I'm going to go play with my sewing machine now.